Welcome to Mindset for Medical Moms. I'm your host, Courtney Given, fellow medical mom and life coach. I'm here to help you handle everything from doctor's appointments to surgery so you can feel confidence and peace as you navigate the ups and downs of medical motherhood. This podcast will share strategies and real life tools to strengthen your mindset and increase your emotional resilience. I'm so glad you're here. Let's go.
Medical moms, I am so excited to welcome my special guest, Katie Taylor from Child Life On Call today. It is so exciting to be able to talk to her about all the things of the hospital life. Hi, Katie. Thank you so much for being here.
Hi, Courtney. I'm so happy to be here. I'm in Austin, but I wish I was with you in Hawaii.
I actually really like Austin. I've been there
twice. It's really fun. It's a good time. It's a good time.
Tell us a little bit about what a child life specialist is and introduce who you are and what you do.
Okay, awesome. Well, thank you for having me. You just brought up before we started this that we've now been in each other's world for 2 or 3 years now online. And that's kind of fun to like grow with these friendships. And I'm just so grateful to be here with you. I respect so much of what you do and what you have to offer. And you come up frequently for me when I'm talking with other medical parents as such a great resource. So a child life specialist, if you don't know what that is, that's totally fine. Even if you've interacted with one, when you ask my husband what it is, we have a fun story that we started dating because we both worked in the operating room, and he is a nurse anesthetist and I was helping the kids go to sleep. And so when I asked him, like, I always think it's fun to ask what other people in the hospital think we do. And I said, well, what do you think we do? And he was like, all I know is you make my job way easier. And I'm like, okay, perfect. We'll take it. We may now date and kiss. That's fine. So I'm down here in Austin. I'm a mom of two. My kids are 4 and 7. I've been a child life specialist for about 13 years. Before that, I worked in the nonprofit world. Child life specialists are basically psychosocial care experts who are also experts in child development. And what we do is we kind of marry those two things together to provide children, families, neonates, adults, as much as we can with support, education, validation, normalization throughout any of the healthcare experiences. So mostly we work in children's hospitals, helping kids and families cope with new diagnoses and pain and discomfort and being away from family and changes and different life-challenging events. But we also work in the community, which is what I do through Child Life On Call, really to spread awareness about our profession, give parents as many resources as possible to feel as empowered as possible during their child's medical experiences.
Yeah, it's so interesting because that story with your husband, I have found myself explaining child life specialists based off of my own experiences because I was like, I actually don't know how to describe their job. I know is that when I needed someone to help distract my child from all of these things that she was going through, they came in and were angels and just like helped facilitate such a smoother process for all the IV changes. And
yeah,
she was getting blood draws like a bunch of times a day. And so they were just coming in our room each time. And it was just so, so helpful. And that was my definition. I was like, well, yeah, here's what they do. That's as far as I know.
That's perfect. Yeah, it's kind of nice to know the background and that we do have training and education in, you know, either child development, child psychology, sociology, and then some universities even offer child life as a major. And then many go to have a master's degree. I do not, but many go to have a master's degree in child life or a related field. We all have to go through a 600-hour internship clinically in the hospital, and then we can sit for a certification exam. And then we have PDUs. We have to keep up with professional development every 5 years to maintain our certification. So that's kind of the way it works. And you'll see child life function differently depending on the hospital you're at. Some are very procedural based, which is kind of what you're sharing, and which will be there for procedures. Others are really play based and focus a lot on therapeutic play. And then you kind of find everything in between.
Yeah, I am kind of sad that I didn't know that you existed outside of the hospital. It's not surprising because there's so many little professions in the hospital or like roles. Your role is definitely not little, but there's all these systems that I had no idea existed. How can parents utilize a child life specialist in the hospital?
Yeah, I think one of my favorite parts about being a child life specialist is partnering with parents. And when I say that, I mean, your child life specialist is going to be the person who is advocating for your family without even ever having met you. So not knowing your background or your story, but I see you have a 7-year-old in the hospital. I'm going to be talking to the doctor before I even get in the room about using numbing cream for if there's going to be a poke or something like that. Or have we, I see that they have to get this medicine, and have we timed it with the time they have to get the other medicine? Or if they're going to be asleep and they need their blood drawn, can we go ahead and just do that under anesthesia? So we can constantly kind of understand the nuances of how the hospital system works and how we can benefit that family. But then when we go in to meet you, the intel that you communicate to us as child life specialists is things that we can disperse to the rest of the team. So we write it in our chart notes. We talk about it when we give report to nurses or to another child life specialist or social worker or chaplain who's coming on. But we tend to be like, we want to be the voice for your family. So tell us, like, last time you were in the hospital, this went really wrong, or this went really right. It worked really well. Or I know when my child is stressed at home, they do X, Y, Z. This is how we get through it. And then we can be your expert communicators to the rest of the team to make sure that information is transferred on, if that makes sense.
Totally. And it's so helpful because I feel like the biggest, for me, at least personally, and I know so many others can relate, is that going from a role of like, okay, I've just got this diagnosis, or even years into the diagnosis and you're working through it and you're in and out of the hospital, talking to doctors can feel intimidating. And it can feel like you don't know how to communicate properly because you're not really sure of your own role. And I was really surprised in how much doctors were asking me, because all of a sudden I'm like, you know, I'm just showing up with a baby that needs help from the doctors. And then they're asking me for information. And I'm like, I don't really even know that I was supposed to be a part of like rounds or these kinds of conversations, or even communicate things to other people in the hospital. Right. So how can medical moms ask for help or ask for support? Because I think that's the first step in just being like, I didn't even know I could ask for help. So how do I do that?
Yeah. I think, you know, once you get settled in the hospital, just tell your nurse and say, I want a consult for all of the things. I want a social work consult, I want a chaplain consult, and I want a child life consult, or whatever you have to give me. And so that can automatically go in the chart and those consults can go out. As a child life specialist, we can sometimes be one child life specialist to 15, 20, up to 50 patients. And so unless you are specifically asking sometimes, or you know, we do as much as we can basically, but we're only one person. So when you ask for that help ahead of time, I think that's really important. One of the other things I really like to communicate to parents is the whiteboard in your room is going to be your best friend. And I want you to ask nurses to write things down on it. I want you to write things down on it. And then I want you to take a picture of it at least once a day, because that can be your record of what happened the day before, what medications you were on. If the doctor comes in and says a word you don't know, and they don't have a pen to write it down, you don't have a pen, just have them write it on the whiteboard and take a picture. And I think that's going to kind of become your medical journal a little bit, because you can refer back to that. It'll have the date, it'll have your nurse's name on there. And a lot of your care team. So I think that way you can kind of take it off your mind and your plate and just keep it on the whiteboard and take pictures of that. That's one of my best strategies. And also when the rounds comes through in the room, you can ask to come in the room and then you can point to the whiteboard and say, well, why, how is this different? This is what I heard yesterday. And you can kind of use it as like a group communication board.
Oh my gosh, that is brilliant. I love that so much, because I think that's another thing. And again, it might just be me, but I felt so I don't even know what the word is. I did not see myself as an authority immediately after getting my daughter's diagnosis. Advocacy was like a bit of a challenge for me. I had just thought doctors know everything. Nurses are in charge. It's very straightforward. And that's really not at all how it is. And while there are decision makers and authority, you know, chains of authority in hospital settings, a parent has so much more power than we realize in the process. And I would not have thought to even write on the whiteboard because I felt like, oh, that's their domain. And so even hearing that as like using it as a tool helps you as a mom to feel more involved and just give yourself a little bit more power and authority to have your voice be heard. So yeah, that's such a brilliant idea.
Oh yeah. I know that nurses, you know, there's going to be so many different personalities. It really doesn't matter how they feel about your involvement in your child's care. It doesn't matter. You have complete permission to step up, advocate, write on that whiteboard, write things down and stick it on the door. You are in charge. That's another thing. If I've got a mom who's, you know, pumping and people are coming in and out of the room and she's like, oh my God, I keep having people come in. I'm like, I got you, girl. I'm going to write, do not enter until this time or check with nurse before entering. I slap it on the door with scotch tape. And that's that. Like, you have control over who comes in your room when. Of course, you're going to want when the physicians are available to come in, and nurses are going to have to get vitals at a certain time. But there's leeway for what you can express. If you need to take a shower and you don't want physical therapy to come in for the next 10 minutes, you can ask them to wait. When child life comes in the room and it's not a good time, you can tell us, I need time. Can you come back in a little bit? Your voice is important. And then we're not going to have a productive session anyway, right? If you're there thinking about you are just about to hop in the shower and you're still hungry and you haven't done this or that. So communicating your needs as well as your child's is just as important.
This brings up something that I think all parents have struggled with. I know clients of mine have expressed difficulty feeling like they can't take a break from their room because most of it, I think, from what I've heard, is guilt. They struggle with feeling guilty. And then the other part of it is judgment from staff. And it's not that they can't, it's just that they feel very self-conscious of the decision to leave their child. And as a provider in the hospital and as someone behind the scenes, do nurses and doctors and all the help that's around want parents to take breaks?
Dear Lord, yes. Please go on a walk, go get coffee, fuel yourself. I had a mom who left, it was her birthday. She was in the NICU and she was always there for this like lunchtime. And she was like, but my girlfriends really want to take me to brunch. But I'm like, you have got to go to your birthday brunch. You know, we will be here. I promise I will come and check in on your daughter. You know what I mean? So that's the other thing is you can use child life. You know, I think we're not babysitters, and that's an important distinction. But when it is at the self-care of the parent to get out and have a break, I would be more than willing to spend 15, 20 minutes of my time so that you can go have that moment and you don't have to feel like you have to leave your child. Now, not every child life specialist is going to practice that way or have the bandwidth, but that is something I frequently did is knock on doors and say, like, when are you getting your coffee today? Like, do you want me to come in? Or, you know, back when I started my internship was really before cell phones and kids could, you know, now they can call on an iPad to talk to their parent or call on the vector phone or whatever it is in the hospital. We would encourage parents to leave their keys at the bedside because the keys was a symbol to the child that the parent was going to return. Okay. So I think just kind of getting into that mindset with your child, like that ritual of mommy is going to go walk away for 10 to 15 minutes. I love you so much, but I have to go so that you know I'm coming back. Why don't you hold on to my scrunchie? Why don't you hold on to my purse? Like, give them something of value that they know is always with you, but is a physical sign. We're going to keep the door open so you can yell for your nurse if you need it. you know, if they're old enough for you to communicate that. But that time of you walking away has no judgment at all. We applaud it. We're grateful that you go do that. And we've got your back when you go.
I love hearing that. And I always mention to my clients, it's like, we can't control other people's perceptions of our choices. It's just out of our control. And I like to give the people around me the benefit of the doubt. It doesn't mean you're always going to get every nurse that you get along with 100%, but give them the benefit of the doubt and believe that they're on your side, because it puts you in a better place to think like we're all on the same team trying to get the same result of, you know, healing and growth, stability, discharge. And when we are so focused on what we can't do, it just continuously pulls us down and drains us. And you never realize how important a 20-minute break can feel until you've done it. And it's like, oh, yeah. I really needed to just step out of the room and away from the beeping for just 20 minutes. And
absolutely.
It's like so refreshing. And you're like, yeah, I actually have the ability to focus now and like talk to doctors. What are your tips for talking and communicating to staff in rounds specifically? I know I keep referencing this time of my life, but during our first hospital stay, again, I was so surprised at my involvement and then especially in rounds. So first of all, what are rounds? I'd love for you to explain what rounds are and how can parents best speak up or communicate in those settings?
Yeah. So rounds will function a little bit differently, but mostly what it is the communication from one care team to another care team. So one care team is either going off service and another care team is coming on. So it's the transfer of information, or it's the team that's on shift today wants to communicate to make sure that everybody is aware of the plan. And so if you don't see rounds happening at your hospital, it's because it's happening behind a closed door. And I want you to know you have every right to ask about those rounds, ask who's attending those rounds, and ask if you can be included, if they can come to your room. It's a lot of best practice now for rounds to happen at the bedside or just outside the room. And so I want to make sure you're asking if you're not seeing, because they're happening in some way. And I want you to be able to feel like you can be involved. So it's really the transfer of information and the confirmation of the plan for the day, for the night, or whenever that team is going to come on. So I think in order to be prepared for rounds, I think you do have to prepare your mind and your heart a little bit that you may not get all the answers you need during this time, that you may not have as much as a voice, or you may be asked a question that you're not ready for. And so that's a lot to have to prepare for. But I think if you are keeping up with the whiteboard and you have a little notepad on your phone and or you know what your plan for the day is when they come by, have those things and ask them right away, because you're not going to be able to listen to the whole thing without thinking about everything that you want to get out there. So sometimes the rounds will come up and they'll say, "Hey, mom, how did last night go?" Or, "Hey, dad, how did last night go?" And that's your opportunity to say, you know, this happened. I'm really concerned about this, but I'm also just really interested to hear what you have to say. And if you wouldn't mind talking slowly, because I did not sleep a lot last night, that would be really helpful. The other thing is to pull on your nurse, because your nurse doesn't have to attend the rounds at all the different beds in the unit. Your nurse just has to attend her three patients. So they may have to leave pretty quickly. They've told you what the plan for the day is, and you're like, shoot, I forgot to ask about this or that. Pull your nurse in, get him or her on your side, and they can be your voice to connect back to the care team.
I'm so glad you pointed that out. There's so many things that I didn't know how to verbalize until you're seeing it from an outside perspective, because there are times where I've had like a few questions, but I've just waited until they brought it up. Like, output, right? Like we're like a specific topic where I'm like, oh, I know that they're going to bring up this topic, so I'll wait until this topic is brought up. But between that point and then when they've brought it up, they've also talked about three other systems or topics with my daughter's body.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, I've totally forgot. And now I have three more questions that have nothing to do with what I originally was going to ask. So putting that out there beforehand is such a way to not forget and still feel like you're being heard.
And Courtney, you brought up a really good point. You're so astute that you picked up on this, but they really do go through systems. So it usually starts head to toe. So we'll start with neuro, and then we'll start with cardiovascular, and then go to pulmonary. So you can kind of start to predict what system is coming next. And the more you know what's coming next, the more you can understand where you are. Because if we go neuro straight to skeletal, maybe that is how your rounds works, but you can start to really pay attention to how do they present this information. And it usually goes in an order of systems.
And I think one of my best tips for rounds is that you're not going to be able to get everything you want, especially in a hospital. There's lots of systems in place. There's lots of policies that can't be changed for better or for worse. However, you asking for whatever you want or a request you have or a question you want clarified, there is no harm in just asking. I remember Zola had a really terrible calf, and she had a blood clot in her leg, and she needed to get on a really high dose of a blood thinner shot. And in order to do that, they had to have like the right dose. So they kept checking her blood at like these very specific intervals. And at some point, because of like life, the intervals had started to shift in the middle of the night at like 2 a.m. And it was so horrible. And she was a really hard stick. And I remember literally like 2:30, like on the verge of tears, so exhausted out of my mind. And I was just like, I don't want to do this anymore. I was like, we need to change it. Can we please talk to somebody? And can we figure this out to where we can shift it? And they were like, the risk of that though is it might delay her time, like getting out of the hospital. And I was like, I'm okay with that. Like, I'm okay with that consequence in this scenario. And so 100%. I think being able to ask, like, what's the consequence if we make this change? And then also just asking, you just never know. And I wish I would have asked sooner, because I think it was like day two of 2 a.m. bloodshot draws that were really difficult. And I was like, oh, and they were like, yeah, we're going to change it. We told the doctor. And the nurses were really great about it and understanding. Yeah. And sometimes you can correct me if I'm wrong, but I feel like sometimes nurses will just look at the patient plan and then follow through with their orders. And it has nothing to do with like, I don't feel like it's like personal that they're doing 2 a.m. blood draw.
Yes.
But it's just like their job. And then until you say something, they're going to be like, oh yeah, we can totally switch this around.
Totally. And I think that's great. So in the NICU, we call it cluster care, right? So we try to cluster as much care at one time as possible. So the other thing is that they were probably in at midnight doing vitals and then at 2 drawing blood, back at 4 to do vitals because it's Q4. And I think you just have to brainstorm with your nurse and say, okay, what can we cluster together during nighttime hours because we need to prioritize sleep? And they could say absolutely not because the doctor feels really strongly, but then you know, like you want that then, because if the doctor feels strongly, like you want the information you need. But if there is a possibility to make things a little bit easier on your family, then let's do it.
Yeah. And I think that's the part of advocacy that I think gets a little bit misconstrued, because I don't think of advocacy for as a parent to be like this really like hard, challenging role. It's a lot of just asking questions. Mm-hmm. And like your very first step is just asking your questions and getting comfortable with allowing yourself to do that. Being Absolutely. Comfortable with hearing your own voice and prioritizing your opinions. And it, like I said, it's not always going to happen, but it's worth practicing and getting that stronger skill of just like asking questions, making requests.
Yeah. And, you know, we're all human. And so it's perfectly acceptable. And even really humbling if you say something like, I'm really tired, this may not come out right. I don't even know that the question I'm asking. But here's what I know. And here's what I'm worried about. Another question I love is when people ask, what have other parents done in this similar situation? Or what would you do if this were your child? And the two things that does is it makes the provider then think about other cases, right? And think about, well, this was different because of that, but they did, you know, it just, it's another way to look at a situation and offer a different perspective. And I think you get that a lot in the community like yours, Courtney, but encouraging, you know, your providers to think about something in a different way can really be helpful.
I love that you said that and pointed that out because it's so true. First, just acknowledging that you're tired can also feel validating for yourself, because I think I hear a lot from other medical moms and my clients that are like, I feel like I have to put on a front and be like, almost like fake it till you make it kind of thing. And while I understand that all providers kind of understand the situations we're in, I do tell my clients, like, this is their everyday life. They're coming in to work. And as much as a lot of providers are passionate about their job, it's still a job. Yeah. And so they've seen your version of your child a bunch of times. Whereas for you, this is a once in a lifetime thing, or a once in a month thing, where it's like, it feels a lot heavier. And so just being able to communicate your feelings and be able to say, like, we had a really rough night and I'm really tired. Please explain it like I'm five, right? Like, be really gentle with me, and also be very clear in how you're speaking, because my brain is processing slow this morning.
Oh my gosh, totally. I say that, and providers need that reminder sometimes too. So we had 80 babies. I bring up the NICU a lot because those are the rounds that speaks out to me a lot. We had 80 babies that we had to get through in about an hour and 15 minutes. It's just almost an impossible task to have to go through. And so they are on autopilot because they want to go home too. They've been there for 24 hours. So just a little jolt of human to human contact is always great. Or ask how, rounds maybe isn't always the time to do it, but like, providers want to know you, you want to know your providers, you know, that communication is so important.
Yeah. It can feel a little bit intimidating, but I think as you, as a parent, can understand one, your role, but also that there are so many other resources in the hospital to help you facilitate that role better. You can feel a little bit more confident in being able to ask for help or communicate. Is there anything else that you feel is important for parents to know while they're in the hospital?
Yeah. One of the things I love is asking for like a family care conference, and they're called something different at every hospital, but that's when all of the disciplines come together. So neurology, pulmonology, cardiology, everybody comes together and sits in a room with the parents. And this usually happens after you've been there for a certain amount of time, but social work will come, speech therapy will come, and everybody's sitting together in human form around a table, and you can ask questions. You can hear what everybody has to say. Now, those tend to last a long time, probably about an hour, and do require everybody to be there in, you know, full present form. So it does take some scheduling. You can't ask for it tomorrow, but you could ask for it next week, you know, depending on your lengthy hospitalization. In those, I would usually come as the child life specialist and offer any kind of developmental support or psychosocial support I could. But my main role was actually taking notes for the family so that they could be present in the meeting. And then I can understand what the pulmonologist is trying to say and write it down in terms that the parents could, almost like a translator, but to be fully present. And, you know, maybe that's one of the roles that both, as you know, you and your partner come in and speak at the family care conference, ask if the social worker can help take notes, if the child life specialist can take notes, so that you can be fully present. But those family care conferences really help everybody get on the same page.
That is such a beautiful tip. I honestly don't remember. We had one of those when Zola was in her first hospital stay. And I get a little bit of emotional thinking about it, because it was one of those, we'd been there for a really long time meetings. And they were like, we all need to come together to figure out what's the next step, because there was a halt in her progression. And she was needing a G-tube and we were really hesitant about it and we were really scared. And I just remember looking at the cardiologist and saying, we aren't even supposed to be here. And they were all so understanding and just like, I'd never felt like they were more human until that moment, because they were just like, I was clearly dealing with like grief about even being in the hospital in the first place, but they just were like so understanding and so compassionate about how hard it was. And it did really feel like it was very impactful to see everybody together and everyone express their desire to see Zola out of the hospital. And so it was really inspiring. And I left feeling so much more peaceful than I had entered, because I was very scared. And we had come up with a plan and saying like, these are the markers she needed to hit, or else the G-tube is the best option. And ultimately she did get a G-tube. But because of that meeting, it ultimately helped me feel better about that transition. And the note-taking would have been really great, because I don't remember half the meeting, but that is such a great tip. I'm going to collect everything that you've said and put them all in a list, because these are such great, because you never realize like these small little asks can make such a big difference for the parent in terms of how they are functioning for the rest of the day.
And ultimately what you deserve, you know, what you deserve to have when you're there. So rely on social work, rely on, you know, and when the reason I say ask for chaplaincy is a lot of times they're there not just to come talk with you about death or grief or your religion. They have the same, a lot of similar skill sets as other supportive professionals in the hospital and can make just as much headway and write notes in the chart. And the more people you can have on your team, the better. And I've been in the scenario that you're in, Courtney, and I think you're right. Like, everybody's walls go down when you're in the room with parents and you're sitting there human to human, and parents can look around and see there are 11 people in here for my kid. And they are all working to the same goal that I'm working at. It's so beneficial for both the team and parents.
It's so powerful and emotional, and it's not always easy because you're usually talking about difficult things. But it is really helpful in seeing the team, because it's like you see them all individually, but seeing the magnitude of the power behind the doors, people working, thinking about your child's progress, it can make a difference.
Yeah. Oh, the last thing I want to say, I don't want to forget, is a primary nurse. And a primary nurse is the nurse who, when they're on shift, will as much as they can have your child as a priority. And so what you get there is continuity of care. And so this nurse knows your child best, and that can work out really well. It does sometimes feel like you're asking somebody to the prom, because you're like, hi, Anna, we really loved, you know, our time together. Would you be interested in being our primary nurse? And I think for so many reasons, you have to respect that the nurse could say no. Mm-hmm. And maybe they just primaried a patient, you know, and now they're looking for some diversity. Maybe they're about to go on vacation in a week. Maybe they don't gel with you the way you think that you gel with them. So many reasons. But I think looking out for those people who you're like, wow, this person really seems to get me and I get them, and talking with the nurse manager or just walking up to the nurse and saying, how do we go about getting a primary nurse? Because this relationship feels really good.
Yeah, I love that. I wish I would have done that her first stay when we were there for 8 weeks, because I think it would have helped me feel more secure. And alternatively, there is nothing wrong with asking for a skip.
Heck yes. Yeah, you get that skip. You get that veto for sure.
We've had a few nurses that are lovely people, but again, just didn't jive with us, didn't feel like we were on the same page with our priorities for Zola, didn't feel like the communication was great. And again, it's not a personal thing. We just mentioned to the charge nurse, like, hey, we would like to have someone else tonight, because usually we were getting like them two or three times in a row for different shifts. And so we were just like, hey, can we have a different one? And we had asked the morning nurse, and we were like, hey, is this other person coming back tonight? And they were like, yeah, they are scheduled to come back with you. And I said, it would be great if we could have someone else. And they were super discreet about it. They were like, yep, no problem. And then came back and told us it was done. And it was no judgment, no weirdness. It was just fine. And I felt better. My husband felt better.
Yeah.
You have to do what you have to do.
You have to do what you have to do. And it's so, that's such a good point. I'm so glad you said that.
Where can people find you online and learn from you? Katie has incredible resources constantly for parents. She's always posting really incredible things about hospitals and advocacy and child life specialist things that you can do for your own child. Where can people find you?
Yeah. So I'm on Instagram, Facebook is Child Life On Call. Any podcast that you listen to is Child Life On Call, which is really parents sharing their own journeys and experiences. And then we sprinkle in some experts like Courtney to come on. And then, you know, I think if you find any resource on our website, we have like a parent starter kit, which just has little ways to help your child take medicine and how to prepare for shots, or just reaching out on DM. We have a Child Life On Call app, which we're now currently selling to hospitals to help expand the child life services and different child life programs. But in the future, that will be available for everyone on the app store. So I'll keep you posted on that too.
I love that. I will link all of the things that she mentioned in the show notes. Thank you so much for being on here, Katie.
Thank you for having me. I love being with you.
Welcome to Mindset for Medical Moms. I'm your host, Courtney Given, fellow medical mom and life coach. I'm here to help you handle everything from doctor's appointments to surgery so you can feel confidence and peace as you navigate the ups and downs of medical motherhood. This podcast will share strategies and real life tools to strengthen your mindset and increase your emotional resilience. I'm so glad you're here. Let's go.